Live from North Hollywood, this is Batch Masters, and once again, I am in the same room broadcasting our podcast with Chris.
Hey, Craig, I love it when we're in the same room.
I know, it's two in a row. This is great. I literally walked down the street to see the stars have aligned and we found ourselves once again within a mile of each other here in North Hollywood.
Beautiful North Hollywood, where when it's not super hot and it's drizzling a little, as it has been the last few days, it's a great place to live.
Well, you might appreciate this, Chris, as a film screenwriter trained. I found myself in regular Hollywood yesterday. Hollywood and Vine, I was tooling around on the metro and got off there. And I went up a few streets to Solar de Cahuenga, under the gaze of the Hollywood sign. Does that ring a bell?
No, it doesn't. Is it a famous location?
Well, it's a hot spot for like screenwriters. They go there and they get coffee and they write their screenplays. So I thought of you. I was there. I just thought I'd check it out. I'd actually never been to it. I'd only heard of it over the years. And so I went. It wasn't quite what I expected. I thought it would be a lot more busy and a bit more social. But I walked in and the handful of people that were there were like literally working on their screenplays on their laptops.
Well, Craig, I'm flattered, but I will remind you and listeners that L.A. is full of successful screenwriters, failed screenwriters, and then there's the step of the totem pole below that,
yes,
where I am, which is below the failed screenwriters. So, sadly, no, I have not been to many cafes like that one.
Well, I've seen some of your work, and I think only promising, amazing things are going to happen in your screenwriting future. And we should plug your YouTube at some point. But back to The Bachelorette, which I think is what our listeners are here for, and
Absolutely.
Our witty, tangential banter about what's going on with the three bachelors that are left vying for Rachel's attention. Let's get a couple errors out of the way. So last week I made the mistake of thinking that Rachel's federal judge dad would be making an appearance on this episode. I thought the guy in the purple shirt in the previews was him. It turns out it's Uncle Jim.
Well, Craig, I thought the same thing. And in our defense, it's true. We got it wrong. Sorry, everyone. But I think that it was teased to make us think that it possibly could be this man who has been elusive so far. So it was disappointing that he wasn't here.
You're absolutely right. And the other thing seems to be that they made it seem like they were flying all of Rachel's family out to Europe or Spain or whatever, and that's where we're going to meet them. But because Rachel's sister, who looks just like Rachel, is 8 months pregnant, we are, in fact, in the great city of Dallas, and that's where all this is going to go down.
Now, Rachel's sister is married to an unfortunate brother-in-law, but I liked her sister, personally. I don't know how you felt about her, but I thought she was... she was kind of sharp. She seemed to kind of be playing for the show a little bit in a way that I appreciated. And I like their dynamic together. What did you think?
Well, Chris, as you can imagine, I have a few thoughts on this. Generally, okay. Absolutely, I liked Rachel's sister. I think Twitter did. She looks like she looks just like Rachel. They seem like sisters. They have a sort of fair amount of sibling rivalry, which I think is healthy. It just seemed like a nice, normal, healthy sister relationship. And you're right, she knew her role for this sort of hometown thing. Now let's talk about the husband. Both his physical appearance and personality, the man is a zero. Ladies and gentlemen,
You're harsh,
and wide. You only see this once, in once every so often. This is like finding a unicorn, folks. This is a zero. He's a zero. I mean, there's absolutely no redeeming quality about him. He's an idiot. Well, worse than that, he's mean to others. He says things that are snotty and he tries to talk over people. He cares nothing about his appearance. I mean,
oh my goodness.
I have nothing good to say about this man. And the thing that really upsets me is, you know, this happens. It's where a woman who's put together and smart and funny like Rachel's sister and goes for these like numbers that are way down on the scale. And it what it indicates is that the woman wants her thumb on the man and wants to be in complete control of the relationship. That's the only way to read it. Like, why else would she be with this guy? I mean, he's got nothing. He's got nothing.
Well, I can't wait till he comes on screen, because your commentary is much more interesting. I think I had, you know, I feel bad for having so few thoughts. I did feel negatively toward him during the moment when he starts chastising Rachel for sort of getting in a, not really even an argument, but just a conversation with her mother.
Right.
And he starts taking the side of the mother and kind of talking down to her. I didn't really like that. But beside that, I can't wait to hear your thoughts as he comes back on screen.
I know. It's just awful. I mean, I guess I've just encountered too many people in my lifetime that, like, try to bring other people down to their lowly level. And it's just, I don't like it. And I don't like seeing it in a reality setting where the guy knows he's on reality TV and he becomes even more snotty. Like, I mean, what's he trying to prove to everyone in the country? You know, it's like, just.
Well, you know, I guess that's what reality is good to get people to hype up their essence, or I don't know, inflate their essence a little bit. And then we can all relate to that in a certain way. So,
well, if you can figure out what Rachel's sister thinks about, or like what he sees in this guy, I'd love to hear it.
Do you know what she does? Do you happen to recall? Is she a lawyer as well?
No, I don't know if they showed it, or if they did, I didn't catch it.
I can't remember,
But speaking of lawyers, let's talk about the dad here, okay? So the dad is once again not making an appearance. Rachel says something like, oh, my dad is caught up in something. I have a few thoughts on this, Chris.
Yeah.
My main gripe is that this man is a federal judge on the District of North Texas. This is a job that's given to you for life by the President of the United States. In this case, Bill Clinton. Okay?
Yeah.
Everyone respects judges. Federal judges are the top. I mean, that's what everyone strives to be in that field. He's respected. His cases speak for themselves. I mean, this is what being a judge is. He's in no danger of losing any of his judge street cred by spending 5 minutes poking his head into pop culture on behalf of his daughter, who's actually kind of nailing this season and making her family look really good.
Yeah, well, I wondered if it was something that if we're supposed to read his absence as his personal distaste for, you know, the Bachelorette and the Bachelor, or if it's he feels it's below his station. I was a little confused and disappointed by that too.
Well,
and it seems like they filmed this over the course of one day or maybe like 2 days.
Right.
So I also thought the time commitment would be minimal, but I don't know. I don't know if there's a theory out there as to why he didn't show up, but I was pretty disappointed.
Well, you know, Judge Lindsay, I'm calling you out. You may think that you're like trying to respect the institution of federal judgeships, but I'm sorry to hear that, you know, ABC Network and the Disney Corporation and your daughter are not worthy of you sitting at a kitchen table and not saying anything and just kind of being seen and supportive. Your now famous daughter, way to go. You should feel really good about yourself.
You know, if you disagree with the things we're saying, Judge Lindsay, please tweet at Bachelor Masters.
No, tweet at Rose Pricks.
That's right, tweet at Rose Pricks, please.
All right, well, Chris, we've gotten all that out of the way. Now let's turn our targets on to Peter.
Here he is. He's the first one up for what is this? They call it a hometown still, right?
I suppose
Rachel's
so, yeah.
Hometown.
Something like that. So when did Peter... Okay, so I don't know if you're... Well, of course you remember, but it was a few weeks ago when they were in Geneva, and I had mentioned that I had a bit of uncomfortableness with Peter at that point. Like when they were up in the... being Bear Grylls in the mountain, and they're being, you know, like in the Arctic tundra, and I just felt like I kind of glossed over him, thinking he didn't have a chance at that point. And you actually called me out on it, and you were like, "Well, why don't you like Peter?" And I really didn't have a good answer for it.
Yeah, well, I understand if you don't personally. I just always thought that she liked him from the beginning. Right.
Well, something has happened between then and, like, today. Today being when this episode was taped. Where he just decided to go all full douchebag on Rachel. Like, okay, so here's what happened. I think we've all been there. I don't know, Chris, if you've been there, but I certainly have. Where you're dating somebody, and then you... This is a kind of a male thing, I think. You decide, you know, you're just not really into the person anymore. And guys are really bad at, like, calling it off. Like, we like to kind of drag it out and then kind of, like, upset the girl to the point where she'll break up with us, right? I mean, this is a straight male perspective. I don't know if two men do this to each other. That'd be kind of wild. But that's what's going on here. He's decided he just doesn't want to pursue this anymore. I would hope that if somebody on this show decides they don't like the person or doesn't want to move forward with it, that they would just sort of cut it off. And I think that's what he's doing. He's just not willing to say, you know, I don't want to, you know, I just don't think this is working out, which is, there's lots of precedents for. There have been contestants that have said, you know, I don't think this is working. In fact,
oh, really?
In last year's Bachelor in Paradise, there was this huge controversy. Yeah, I mean, just all hell broke loose because towards the end, the guy said that to the girl, you know, I just don't think this is going to work out outside the show. And she just completely lost it because she felt like he was leading her on throughout the course of the month or whatever.
Yeah.
But this is happening. He's just, you can tell, he just wants to say, you know, I just don't want, you know, I just kind of like want to. You know, I made it to third place. That's great. This isn't working out. I'm out of here. But he just decides to go douche on her. He's acting like an idiot in front of the parents. He's like, he's trying to, I don't know. He's acting like a guy who doesn't want to be in this meeting the parents. I mean, I think I've been there. Yeah. I don't know if you've been there, but that's the feeling I get.
Well, yeah. And I wonder if there's got to be people who join the show and are surprised that they get on the show to begin with.
Right.
Surprised that, and I'm not saying, you know, Peter is a good looking guy, someone who seems like he would do well on the show. But if you are that person, I think the odds are always against you. So I sort of wondered if he got on the show and that's amazing. And then you're kind of going to compete and you want to be in it to win it. But you don't, maybe, you know, the rational part of your brain doesn't ever really think that you're going to win. And he might have gotten so far and think, oh my goodness, you know, I've gotten to the end of this reality competition. I might really have to marry this person.
Right.
And that could be part of it. Or, and I thought you would have a better perspective on this than me, do people ever angle to be the Bachelor? Like, I could see if Peter didn't win this, he would be a contender to be like a Bachelor.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think probably of all of the Bachelor memes or tropes, that's got to top the list, is people vying to be the next Bachelor or Bachelorette. I mean, that was certainly Nick's strategy. And
Nick.
So, that definitely happens. Peter just goes so, I mean, he just goes limp that I can't imagine anyone would make him the Bachelor at this point, because he just, I don't know. I mean, he kind of comes across like I'm going to be manipulative. Like, he's trying to be, like, he's manipulative. He's just kind of like, again, like, if you're in a relationship that you don't want to be in anymore, but you're just not, you're a guy and you just don't want to break it off. That's just how it is. Like, you end up saying snotty comments even if you don't know you're saying them. You know what I mean? Like, you'll say stuff that's just kind of, like, snippy and a little bit insincere. He's kind of doing that to her.
Well, the funniest thing with Peter, I thought this episode had to do with snippy comments he made to and about Brian, which I think we'll see, where he gets angry that Brian, he calls him, like, a cocky Miami guy. And, I thought that was pretty funny. But equally, Brian accuses, you know, Peter of not being here for Rachel, you know, that even if he wins, he's not going to propose to her. So yeah, there are some funny things, but also the I would say the secondary drama of this episode, because I think the main drama they kind of build up around Brian and he has the last date,
right.
But is the stuff that goes on with Peter toward the end, where he sort of lays it out on the line to Rachel, which is completely in line with what you're talking about, where he sort of digs his heels in on, like, I don't want to seem like I'm really committed to this thing. And in terms of his personality, especially after last week's hometown, I don't really understand the appeal of Peter, other than he looks the part.
Right.
For me.
Is my recollection correct? So I've only watched the episode once, obviously, last night, so I might have this wrong, but does this sound about right? So it seems like he made the decision that what he's going to do is blame everything on this sort of, like, pseudo-religious belief that getting engaged is marriage. Is that kind of what his argument was? It's like,
that's what I got too.
Here I am at the end and I'm gonna go all, like, moral superiority on Rachel in order to get out of this, and that moral superiority is gonna be around this notion that, like you think it's more dating and I think it's more marriage and we can't reconcile those differences. So instead of just coming right out and saying, you know, I don't think this is working, my feelings aren't there, he's just going to kind of, like, try to bottle it up around that one specific issue. And then they just sort of both sit there, right?
Yeah, it's exactly. He says that he wants to be engaged just as many times as he wants to be married once.
Right.
And he takes it very seriously. And the mother, who kind of plays expert diplomat with everyone, I think,
right,
where she has to seem equally kind of discerning and willing to criticize, but also, you know, welcoming. She says that she appreciates his, quote, honesty, and but it sort of, obviously, that kills the conversation a little bit. And I think he asks for a blessing in a weird way. He says, you
right,
know, he wants the blessing to keep dating their daughter.
Right.
If the time should ever come, he, like, wants the blessing to return and then ask to marry her.
Yeah.
So.
If only he were, like, taller and darker and better looking and an international soccer star, he would be Juan Pablo, the infamous past bachelor who did not get engaged at the end.
So, oh, man.
Well, his hair is full-on gray. We've hit the end.
Yeah.
We've hit the end of the journey of his graying hair. And this will probably be the last we see of Peter.
Yeah, I think that it's time to let Peter go, but we'll see. It's like a presidency, you know. It's like he's done 9 weeks on The Bachelor, The Bachelorette, and he's got full-on gray hair now.
Well, Chris, I appreciate you saying that. That is a joke that has been played in many different podcasts and Twitter feeds during these last 9 weeks, is the graying of Peter's hair. So
hey,
I'm glad that we just put our hat into that ring.
You know, and again, I don't always, I don't know what's going on in the Twitter sphere, so sometimes I think, isn't this great? We're the first people to ever say this.
No, it's good. It makes us, you know, we're just as connected as they are. I'm always a little fearful. Like, I think you're probably this way too, just from what I know about you. Like, I always feel like my opinion is always a little different than everyone else's, so I kind of have to listen and read other people's first just to make sure that I'm not completely bonkers. I feel like I'd make a really bad film critic for that reason, because I would be, like, praising RoboCop 2, which I think is, like, the number one dystopian film of all time, whereas other people are, like, you know, talking about, like, actual, you know, drama films that
Craig,
important directors.
I'm right there with you, because I am a complete fraud, and I feel that way all the time. And usually I don't pick up on really obvious things that people
right,
pick up on, but I pick up on some strange thing that no one cares about, so I know what you mean. But one thing that I think I hope everyone picks up on is that Eric is the best.
He is.
I don't know if other people think that.
He
but,
is. And you know what's really a shame?
What?
Well, okay, so you know, during you talked about the presidents. The presidential elections typically come down to, like, one moment, right? So, yeah. Like, with Howard Dean, you know, when he had the microphone and went to, like, in front of the Iowa crowd, that was the end of his campaign. And, you know, when Trump told Hillary, you know, well, you should be arrested during the debate, and that was, like, you know, you can kind of, like, pick out these, like, single moments where it's over. I just hate to say this as a white person, but when he said axe instead of ask in front of the mom,
yeah,
I think that was it. I think
that was the moment.
It was like culture clash. It was like guy from the streets who's trying really hard to live in the world of the upper middle class versus the upper class who's trying really hard to not associate with the middle class.
Right. Yeah. That definitely jumped out to me. And I if it's not painfully obvious already, I'm also, you know, I'm a white guy from kind of like a middle, you know, lower middle class background. And but this has definitely felt like, I think class is the right way to put it. It's more, it's not necessarily, you know, so much a racial thing, but you know, Rachel's family is from, it looks everything from the manners to the,
right.
The environment. It's extremely upper class.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good way to put it, that Eric, in the way he's represented himself and a little bit from what we've seen from the hometown, is, you know, from more of like a lower working class kind of background. And that definitely seemed to collide. Whereas I don't know about Peter, seems like he's from definitely maybe like upper middle class. And certainly Brian seemed like his family had a little more money. So they're a little more comfortable.
Well, yeah, we've mentioned that. It's like Brian seems to come from some source of independent wealth. So he just sort of like has that swagger where he just doesn't have to worry about money. I don't know. Like, that's just the sense I get. But
I think your mother can only love you that much if she's at least reasonably well off. Otherwise, she's worried about other things.
Well, it's just really unfortunate because Eric is trying so hard and he's doing so well.
He's charmed everyone, too. He's like a naturally pretty charismatic guy, I think.
And it would work, you know? Like, what a great relationship to have these sort of two worlds coming together, especially because freaking Rachel's a prosecutor, you know? She's probably put guys like Eric who didn't, you know, do the steps that he took to get out of his situation in jail. And, like, what an interesting mix of, like, backgrounds that would, I think, would have been really interesting. But, you know, I think this has been said on other podcasts, and I think it's even been said here. It's like Rachel seems to like this sort of straight arrow, dull sort of, like, straight-laced dude that both Brian and Peter represent.
Yeah.
And Eric's just sort of a wild card that, you know, much maybe, like, you know, her sister, like, literally likes a zero, married a zero. And that, to, like I said, indicates to me this sort of, like, control issue. Maybe Rachel, even though she's a little bit more willing to date a guy who, you know, has, like, an actual number, like, Eric just pushes it a little too far, because his personality definitely puts him up into the high numbers. You know what I mean? Like
he seems
he's a very cool guy. He's very high up. Maybe that just intimidates her, or she doesn't want to give up that level of control to a guy who's like has a better personality than she does. I mean, there are a lot of girls and a lot of guys that I think don't like that. And that's how they choose a partner. So she wants a guy a little bit more towards the middle, who's just sort of doesn't cause waves, doesn't have this big personality, because that's who she's comfortable with.
Yeah, that, you know, I hadn't thought of it that way before, but that makes sense to me. And I would think that having her family just seems like they're really high achievers, and that could be a mold that you cast yourself in. So I could see that anything that threatens that, you know, that, you know, it's like some sort of like instinctive ego. I don't know if there's a better term someone's come up with it for that, but it's like, I could see what you're talking about, that it's like, you want to at least hold on to the status that you're like from the family of the federal judge, and, you know, you are important. And, but Eric, to me, and I know the appearance of realness is not the same as realness itself, but he seems the most real to me. I think that's just what I like, that he always seems like, if I met him in person, he would be the one acting most closely to how he acts on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, you know, like, Rachel seems, I mean, there's children that are kind of cut from the same tree as their parents and children that aren't. She seems very, like, I mean, she seems to just be be like her mom. And the mom gave, just, you could sense just the utter disappointment when he said axe instead of ask, that she probably doesn't even know she did, but I, like, the editors seem to hold on that shot just enough that we could sense that like deep disappointment that maybe, well, so the producers were in the room, maybe they sensed it and they wanted to have that come across on the show, because that, you know, that was just killer. And she has the same sort of look as Rachel does, and I think that's just, it's just there. It seems to be the undercurrent of this whole scene.
Yeah, sort of on the surface, what they hold against Eric is that he's never been in love. That's what they try and kind of use as his weakness.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, that's a tough position to be in, because he's a pretty young dude. I think he's in his late 20s. He's dated, you know, he talks a little bit about his dating history, but maybe, you know, he hasn't been engaged or had a really, really serious relationship. But it's like, what do you say that, you know, you were in love with someone you dated for eight right. months? Or it's a difficult position to be in. So I sort of, you know, I felt like they're hunting for something to find as his weakness, and that's kind of what they come up with. But I don't know if it's completely fair, because he seems really genuine about all of these things. But yeah, it just seems like they're not rooting for him necessarily.
Right. Well, it's just, I mean, Rachel's family is a world that I'm just not a part of, where things, I mean, her dad's a judge, you know, it's all about rules and frameworks and structures. You know, it's like,
yeah,
Derrida would be very happy with this family. It's like,
it's our, like, other Bachelor podcast bringing Derrida into the discussion.
It's like love, you know, I guess a more laid back person. It's just like, it's like you love who you love and you date who you date and you don't like who you don't like and you like who you like. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, I guess I was just brought up
just to
not think about it that much.
Right.
And then for everyone to be creating these like rigid frameworks around it, especially when Brian comes in and the mom's like, well, if you've been dating for 1 month and 3 weeks, it's not love. But if you've been dating for 2 months and 1 week, it is love.
Yeah, I thought that was funny, too, when Rachel was sort of describing her feelings and her mom was, well, I understand that maybe that's something that it seems like a very, and I mean, when I say conservative, you know, I don't mean like politically, but like in terms of like preserving the family unit kind of thing, like a conservative, like mom thing to say, that it's like, well, I want my
right.
child to be really sure about this stable relationship. But right. yeah, I like Rachel a lot. But to be honest, I think to your point, what you're saying, if I were dating someone like Rachel and it got to a point like this, I think I would be out after a visit home, either of my own volition or because I would just fail. I would not. Also, it's like this family situation would be too much for me. I would not fit in. So I kind of appreciate some of the discomfort. But Eric is also such a good sport, because he is really trying with all of this. I know he's on the show, so you're going to try. But
That's interesting. Well, the sense I got, kind of based, you know, kind of going off what you just said, like my experience with women, whereas men like to, when if they don't want to date the girl anymore, they sort of drag it out, like I've mentioned a few times.
Yeah.
I think in my experience, women are really good at like waking up one morning and deciding the relationship's over, and then that's it. It's like, I've had that happen to me a few times, and I see it, it's like, that's how it is in the movies and stuff. It's like a woman has this ability to just like, one second they're in love and everything's great, and the next second it's like, no, it's over. So like, I feel like after this day, like if this was real life, she would wake up the next morning and that's it. It's over. Didn't work out. And then, you know, she'd call him or have him come over and then break up with him. And that would be it. And he'd be like, whoa, what the hell just happened?
Yeah. You know? Oh, Eric, can we get him to be the Bachelor? I don't know if, you know.
It'd be an interesting move to have, like, the first black male Bachelor after the first black Bachelorette.
Right.
I was thinking that, too. I think I've dissed his job before.
He's so a personal trainer.
Yeah, I don't necessarily want to do that again, but like I do like the trend of like actually having people with like solid lifelong careers, like being a prosecutor like Rachel. I just don't want to like revert back to these sort of like jobs that you don't have your whole life or like careers. Like, sorry, you're not going to be a personal trainer when you're, you know, 50. So it's like, you know, until I just, to me, bachelorette means you've done your career, you're stable in that, and now you're, you know, you're a bachelor. People want to be around, you know, girls want to date you, guys want to date you because you're a bachelor.
Right.
You have some money in the bank, you know, you maybe own some property or something like that. That to me, I hope they continue that trend. And if that means we don't see Eric again, great. But doesn't he go, I think he goes on Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh, I'm not sure.
Is that true? Oh, that's, speaking of which, there was a TMZ about, the swimmer guy from,
right, Robbie, I believe.
Robbie is now holding hands with Amanda, who is the really skinny girl who's been on like 3 or 4 seasons of Bachelor in Paradise because she keeps coming on and not finding love. And
where is she from initially? What season?
It would have been Chris Soules, the Iowa guy who killed another farmer recently.
Okay.
I think maybe a season before that, but she ended up in the last Bachelor in Paradise dating the baseball player, semi-pro baseball player, and they broke up sort of, she accused them of like being emotionally abusive and all this kind of stuff like that. But she's the one that gets baby shamed or parent shamed because people are constantly like, why do you keep coming on the Bachelor in Paradise? Shouldn't you be home with your kids or something like that? You know? Mm. So the fact that she's with Evan is actually kind of interesting because everyone's kind of, you know, there's just a large group of people that kind of root for her because, you know, she seems like a nice person. So, huh? Anyway, TMZ is your source for Bachelor in Paradise news. And we will be launching our Facebook page in conjunction with the August premiere of Bachelor in Paradise.
Very exciting, about a month away. I hope Eric's there. I would like to, you know, I feel like he's one of these people that it's really the last 2 weeks that we get to know him pretty well. I really felt like he was one of these guys that the thing that we knew him best for before, which a coworker of mine reminded me about this and I'd forgotten because my impression of him is so different now, but he was the guy that's like, why is my name in your mouth guy?
Right. Well, you said he was off his meds at one point, like, which is really the only way to, well, I don't want to, devalue medicine and mental health, but there's very little things that I think can explain that dark place he went to and suddenly got all combative. And then he just like that bounced back.
Yeah.
It's sort of like his medication got a little screwy and then he got it back on track. And then he like went back to being the Eric that we knew and loved from his little preview during the, Women Tell All or whatever.
Oh, and next week, speaking of people telling all, the men tell all.
Right.
Next week. Well, boy.
Well, you know, that caught me off guard because I thought there was going to maybe be another straight up episode because the to be continued right in the middle of the sex romp rooms caught me off guard.
Another awkward and unnecessary to be continued. I don't know right. What the cliffhanger really was.
Well, so we saw Eric have sexual relations with her, right? So Eric
implied,
and then Peter effectively breaks up with her, but we still have Brian to go, right? So we're going to go into the live men tell all before knowing what happens on Peter's sex romp room, right? Or sorry, Brian's sex romp room, right?
Yeah, apparently, and they air the men tell all and then the episode, I believe, right? It's the same week. I think they do both.
Is it? Oh,
I think so.
You're saying we're gonna get the men tell all and then we're gonna get the episode.
I think it's concurrent. Either it's like a two, you know, when they do a Monday Tuesday 2-night event, or they just have like a really long time block. But I think they're both happening this week.
And will that be the finale as well?
I believe so.
Okay.
I believe so, but I'm wrong about so many things. But in any case, yes, I'm looking. That's something that is even more produced and staged in the show, but I always love those tell-all. I don't know. I have no idea why. They're the most stupid things, and I love them.
Well, we're going to get, you know, General Lee back and, you know, Confederate... Appomattox.
We get Kenny too.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone's gonna lay into. Is it Lee? Is his name Lee?
Why do I think it is? It because I'm thinking of the Civil War.
Well, you named him General Lee. I don't know if that's because his name was Lee. I can't remember suddenly.
Well, we all know who we're talking about.
Yes,
that's
we do.
Not his name. God. Oh, but look what's going on in the episode. We've got Rachel's friends. They're bachelor fanatics. They love the show and they want to talk to. This is where I don't know if you felt this too, but this episode felt a little too transparent in how much it wanted to stack the favor in terms of like stack the deck in favor of Brian. Because they make it seem, they always tease that like his hometown is going to be way worse than the other guys. But he's the one who gets to meet the friends.
Right.
They're the ones who like the show. They give him completely softball questions. And then his hard hometown seems like a ruse just to have Rachel defend him more vigorously. It's like they're trying to play that stereotype that it's like, you know, the person that usually in, you know, stereotypically a woman wants is like the one that their family objects to. It's not like the guy that they're like, yeah, he seems nice. And one of her friends very pointedly says like, oh, Eric and Peter, they're both nice. But then, you know, they combat with Brian in like a very fake feeling way to me so that she can be, you know, get huffy and say like, I want you to see what I see in him. I don't know.
No, I think you're absolutely right. There's definitely something more to these hometowns than we're getting. Like, it's almost like she had told her family, like, Brian's the guy.
Yes.
It's like
the only one they grill, really.
You get this in job interviews, like, if they'll bring in three candidates for a job, like, typically somebody will sort of let the number one candidate know they're the number one candidate, and it's theirs to lose, just because it kind of shifts their tone a little bit. Like, I kind of feel like it's been understood that Brian's, it's his to lose, because that, everything, you're right, kind of like, everyone's a little different around him, and the whole, even the editing, and then the friends, and even the parents, they're just all acting a little different around him, and the way that the friends react are like, okay, this is the number one guy, we're gonna, like, be all giggly, bubbly, we love The Bachelor, and you're probably gonna win, but then the parents' way of sort of parsing that information is like, well, we're gonna be really, you know, we're gonna like make sure that he's number one, and we're gonna kind of like put him in a position where he needs to like, you know, like they're gonna treat him a little bit more like, oh, you're the prom date coming home, and we need to like, you know, beat you up a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And they even have they leave some shots and scenes in where the mom is sort of recognizing like the I don't know, like the artificiality of it a little. Like at the end, I think she thanks him for like for withstanding the firing line, essentially, yeah. Which I thought was kind of funny.
Well, okay, so I tweeted this last night, and I think it's our number one tweet of all time, like the number of people that hearted it or whatever. He actually says the words chiropractic physician. It was,
he does.
I almost started crying, Chris. It was such a wonderful moment for me.
And the Oscar for best TV moment of the year goes to Brian and the chiropractic physician remark. He brings it. Yeah, he does. When the friends talk to him, he says, yeah, I've been practicing for 8 years, right? And don't they say, oh, you seem really young for someone who's been practicing, you know, being a chiropractor for 8 years. And he says, well, I'm 37.
Well, as you know, I know a thing or two about chiropractic, but it's not like a full-on med school. Like, it's almost,
yeah,
it's like it's like grad school.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to devalue their, I say this every time, I think chiropractors do a good service, but they don't do the full, like, going to med school, so like you go for a few years, or even if you even go for a few years, so you could literally be starting your practice at age, you know, 24.
Right. Yeah, you're out of, if you went straight from undergrad to get this degree.
Right.
Yeah. that's not crazy. If he's 37 and he says he's been practicing for 8 years, then he finished whatever he was doing at like 29, which is pretty. Exactly. Yeah.
So if 28, 29 minus 3 years, that's 25, and took a few years off, you know, after undergrad, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, he probably tooled around on whatever trust fund he lives off after college, probably traveled Europe or something, and then came back to Miami. He's like, well, what am I going to do now? I'll become a chiropractic physician.
Oh, my goodness. I found something out that I don't really know enough about to bring it up, but I will anyway. A coworker who loves The Bachelor showed me that Brian was on a reality show. Do you know about this? When he was younger? He was on, like, a Disney reality show, maybe when he was in his teens or 20s, really? Called The Player. And it's like, you know, I think, now, I don't understand it too well, so sorry if I'm misrepresenting this, anyone who knows it, but something like, it's a dating show, but the contestant, the woman in this case, is trying to figure out which of the guys is a player, like a bad guy. And I think he was, like, the player, the bad guy back in the day. And she showed me a photo of him back in the day. And he has this, like, it must have been, like, the 90s or something. Because he has this, like, 90s, like, long hair. It was really funny. So Brian's not new to this. And I think that's why people are also a little suspicious of him.
Well, I might explain, like, what he did. He's like Jesus, you know? No one knows what he did in his 20s. Maybe that's what he did. He was trying to, you know, like, pursue. Well, because that would have been, like, Real World and Road Rules. There was, like, a pipeline for becoming a reality star. And maybe he was in that. And that's what he did for a few years before he decided to go to chiropractic physician school. And it's just, like, I wish I could get him in a room for 5 minutes just to find out, like, how do you decide to just shift and go to chiropractic school? It's just I just cannot figure that point out. I need to call up a chiropractor. I know some chiropractors. Maybe I should call them up and be like, if you knew you were always, because, like, the chiropractors I know got biology degrees and whatnot, you know, like, they kind of knew, you know, maybe they wanted to go to med school but decided chiropractic. I would like to know what it takes to just suddenly decide you're going to become a chiropractor when you're in your mid-20s or something.
Well, my sense is that Miami culture is pretty unique also, and I wonder if there's something in Miami that's like, there's some cohort of people that decide to become chiropractic physicians. I don't know.
It's either, like, cocaine distributor, model, pro football player, you know, dancer or chiropractor.
Yeah, I think that maybe dancer is the better term, but I've heard, you know, that I don't know if strip club's the right term, but the, you know, that's what I think, where the most strip clubs in the country are, I believe.
I believe it. Have you seen Cocaine Cowboys, where they talk about how, like, the entire skyline of Miami is built on, like, drug money and stuff like that?
No, but, like, I've heard that's amazing, though. That's a documentary series, right?
Well, they make a really interesting case have, like, you know, because, like, the cocaine distribution stopped going through Miami significantly, like, after, you know, Pablo Escobar and all that kind of stuff. And so, like, Miami has been left with this amazing rich skyscraper skyline and all these, like, amenities, and, like, they're trying to, like, regrow their sort of tourist and sort of, like, Latin, like, economy to sort of, like, justify, like, this amazing city. So it's kind of like it's a really interesting way that the documentary filmmakers take it. I think you'd like it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'll have to check it out. Well, we saw the brother-in-law that you love to hate was just on screen with Rachel during that moment of
You see what I did there? I didn't even want to acknowledge it, so I went on this. I changed our podcast.
I knew it, and I had to poke the bear. I had to rile you from your slumber. Right. But Rachel had a line that she said that I'd forgotten during her talk with him, where she says she's also, I have to say, she's very diplomatic, because I am of the personality type where I think I'm more the kind of person Rachel says she is, but she shows she's really a better person. She says, I'm chill until I'm not, right? Because he's sort of accusing her of getting kind of riled up back at the table.
Right.
But what she did was actually very diplomatic, and what she is here is diplomatic. Whereas me, I feel like I'm very easygoing until, when I get annoyed with someone, it's like, I would have handled that so badly. I would have been like, I would have snapped at him. I would have yelled at him. I would have been moody. I would have then shut down. And
wow, I don't want to get on your bad side.
I'm truly a monstrous person, whereas Rachel says she is, and she's not. So I thought that that was very funny and telling, you know, that she takes the high road, whereas he gets to be a little bit of a douchebag again.
Right. Well, for people that know me, like, my strategy is if I get in a situation where I'm starting to get upset or, like, feel like I'm being attacked, my strategy is to actually just stop talking or, like, go into very intentional talking mode, because that will just get the other person more and more worked up, because you're not, like, engaging in the way that they think you should be engaging. So I feel like if I were in Brian's position, I would go into that mode and it would just piss her off even more and it would end very badly. So, like, whereas you it sounds like you would get even more riled up and sort of, like, go up to her level and you guys would just start getting into this huge fight. I would go in the opposite direction and we'd still end up in this huge fight. So let's hope that you and I never get into a fight, because then we'd be on polar opposites of that.
Well, we'll work it. One thing I pride myself on, but you'll feel free to disagree when we get in a fight and this doesn't happen. I think I'm good at apologizing, realizing when I'm wrong and making up. But again, feel free to disagree later.
All right. Well, I don't think I've ever apologized. So, well, speaking of not apologizing, the mom is, you know, just really can't understand. I mean, we talked about this last time when we were in the hometowns and Dean's dad and all this kind of stuff like that. This lack of self-awareness that you're on a reality TV show and what that represents. It's like you and I had come to the conclusion that Dean's dad had never seen The Bachelor and will never understand it, never will. It's just not interesting to him. So he just didn't understand the rules that come along with it. And to Eric's family's credit, I think we both felt that, like, Eric's family nailed it. Like, they understood what was going on. They let their personalities come out. They weren't, like, threatened. I feel like the mom is right on that edge where she's trying very hard to keep it together for the camera, because she knows she doesn't want to embarrass Rachel. She's not going to that, like, Dean's dad level where she's just totally not aware that she is on the show. Like, she understands the rules, she's seen the show, and she's trying to keep it together. But that said, she's grinding her teeth, like, because she cannot understand this love situation. Like, she cannot understand how feelings can develop on a reality show.
Right.
And both Rachel and Brian are trying very hard to explain it to her, but I think all parties agree that they're not getting anywhere, and they just sort of kind of, like, end it. It's going to happen here in a minute, where they just all sort of, like, take a deep breath and start apologizing to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like, I don't know if she's kind of produced into this situation where there's always got to be some objection or drama that the parents or the siblings have to every candidate. And so I was kind of wondering with her, and this is all in the realm of speculation based on nothing, but the father is absent and she's left here to kind of represent the family, the Rachel's right. mother, Mrs. Lindsay. And so I thought, was she having to kind of toe the line between representing sort of like what the Lindsay family stance is on the reality show, on The Bachelorette, but then also kind of be the person that brings the drama that, like, the show needs for... It just felt like that was, like, the line that she was towing, is, like, show right. that this is, like, dignified family. I need to represent myself, my daughter, my husband, you know. But that's all the more that I wish that the father was actually here, because I think, right. like, there's huge symbolic value of him. And I think a lot of people do see this, and you're a person connected to the political machinery of America, and this is a huge part of the media machinery of America. Go ahead, like, there's no harm in having some representation and trying to be in control of that. Yeah,
that's well put. Well put. I've already called out the dad. He knows how I feel. I'm sure he probably isn't even thinking of me, but it is even more unfair to leave it all to your wife. I mean, when you get married, it is a partnership. Your kids expect that, and you know, you're bringing people into your home. It's a little unfair to leave it all to the mom to try to kind of like represent that couple.
Yeah,
I think is what you're trying to get at.
Yeah, and you know, I don't know if you would agree with this too, but one thing I would say about The Bachelor and Bachelorette is the seasons I've seen, they do a pretty good job of being pretty apolitical, I think, in that, right. Like, it kind of, okay, any, quote, conservative qualities, like, it appeals to middle America and some of the, like, puritanical value system.
Right.
But then, you know, it feels like there's maybe people behind the scenes who have certain, you know, progressive views, and it all kind of seems like it's a wash. It's a little bit of like a
strange...
Yeah,
they wash it all out. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. So I was thinking, oh, if he felt like he was violating some, like he was siding with some sort of political agenda, I don't really see that. That's something on the show I don't really see. It's like pretty apolitical, I think. But, okay, we're being teased now with some of the drama to come with Peter. Rachel is dabbing her eyes and crying, and we come back from commercial break, and suddenly we're in Spain.
We are. We're in Spain. And so Eric must have done something right, because he gets the first sex romp room, right? Unless I have, like, when I was walking over here to your place, Chris, I was thinking, like... Did I totally get the end of this episode wrong? Did all three of them go into the fantasy suites? Because I was so caught off guard by the fact that Brian had a to be continued, and then Eric went first. And then Eric and her seemed to get along great, and he wakes up in the morning, he's got his shirt off, they're in the bathroom together, so it seemed to have gone, like, completely swimmingly.
Yeah. They definitely imply that they have sex, but no, they wouldn't have... They always tease the fantasy suite with the should you forego your individual rooms card, and I think they would show that for every person. I did.
Well, even if they didn't have sex, I mean, they obviously had a really great date, ended in the morning. That's wonderful. So I guess that the way they framed it, it's like if Brian is this front runner that we're supposed to be on board with, why would they have had Eric go first and have this amazing day, and then to be continued Brian's? It's like, what are we supposed to do with that?
Yeah, I don't know. I did see an Entertainment Tonight clip where Rachel says that she was not intimate with everyone in the fantasy suite, so there's only three people, and so
and we got to assume that Peter doesn't get one, right?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking either...
So everyone is two.
It's got to... Well, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. If Peter doesn't get one. Yeah, I don't know. Because they definitely frame it on the show. Like, you're supposed to think, you know, that, like, at least... I don't know if this is a family show or whatever, how graphic that we get in terms of our detail. But, you know... That something physical happened between, like you said, Eric wakes up with his shirt off, which in film or something, if that were the shot that you saw, you would assume, okay, that's like a stand-in for, you know, non-explicit sex that we assume, like, they slept together.
Well, some of the best nights, I think some of the best nights with somebody is when you don't have sex. So it's like, I'm totally thinking of Eric's night with her completely in non-sexual terms. I think they have this great date, and whatever, they wake up in the morning, and like, my brain is not even going to sex, because it's like I'm thinking about all these other things, and I'm just thinking about, like, how amazing it all was, and then they cliffhanger Brian. It's just like,
I see,
I can't understand what they're trying to communicate to us with that,
because in real life I agree. I think I could see that if you have this, like, special night with someone, I could see, like, you had a great date, you both come home and you're, like, really tired or something, and it's kind of hot, and it's like you jump into bed together and, like, go to sleep, and you've never had sex or any, you know, it's early for that, and that's a great date, and you wake up and that's how it looks. I agree, but it's sort of like the film language is like, that usually means, like, oh, they had sex. So I also don't know exactly. And then you're right, the cliffhanger with Brian, who seems like the episode set him up as, like, he's the dude to beat, like you said. What's it? I don't know what it is.
Well, especially because isn't he the guy in, like, the very first episode that was, like, all slobbering all over her?
Yes.
Like, that was his hook, was, like, he's super sexual.
I think he was the first kiss.
Right.
Yeah, the first kiss.
So, of course, they're going to have sex. So, if Rachel's on... Because I can't imagine him... He's got to have all these, like, built-in moves to, like, get a girl to have sex with him.
Yeah.
Because that... I mean, that just seems to be in his nature. So, it's like, if she's on Entertainment Tonight and says, I wasn't intimate with... everyone, and everyone is him and Eric, it means that Eric didn't have sex. But, like, just, I guess what I'm really worried about is we're going to end up in a Nick Raven situation, which is Raven was really the girl for Nick.
Yeah.
And yet he picked Vanessa because Vanessa was the voluptuous hot one. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. Like, he's the one that he came into this thinking he wanted, and Raven cut him off guard, ended up in second place, but she really was into him. They got a long way, like, Vanessa hated him.
Yeah.
And yet he still picked Vanessa.
The funniest thing.
I think that's what's gonna happen, is like, Eric's the one for her. Eric's the gentleman. Eric's got the personality. Eric doesn't have to, like, wear his sexuality on his sleeve, and yet she's still going to pick Brian because that's just, like, what she came into this thinking she was
right,
she
yeah.
wanted. And it's just really unfortunate.
Well, when they say that this really is a 9-week process, or what, you know, it's sort of every episode is called week one through whatever, and that's
right.
really the timeline. That is a really compressed timeline. So sometimes I forget that it's like, yeah, that's crazy that these people. It is. I really. That's one thing that I think must be genuine when people talk about, like, this has been a transformative experience. This has been, you know, that I believe, because it's so surreal. It's such a world. It's like there's so much going on that I think it's hard, yeah, to seriously, I think that's an interesting challenge, that it's like you make these connections with these people who, even though it's under artificial circumstances, that's like, real feelings, but how can that exist once you're not in this pressure cooker? You know, it's really weird.
Well, that, and, you know, people just act differently when it's like their first love, I guess.
Yes.
You know, like, I kind of see Rachel's point of view, I guess, which is like, no one really wants to be someone's first love. I mean, I know one of my good friends from high school and whatnot, he married his first love, first sex, and all power to him. They have kids. They'll stay together forever. It's awesome. So, you know, whatever. It's not, you know, that works for, yeah, to each his own. But I think probably generally, you know, maybe like you get your first dates out of the way. You get your first loves out of the way. You get burned. You learn, you know, you pick yourself up. You learn. And I think that matures your emotions, because, like, you realize some of the things you did were just stupid and childish. You realize some of the things you really value, and that's what you want to look for. So you kind of work it out, right?
Yeah.
And if somebody truly hasn't, like, had that sort of committed relationship that maybe turned into love, and I could see that being a because there's a, like, certain, you know, that maybe she's just past that. She's the type of person that just doesn't want to be with that kind of guy. And that would be very difficult to get over. Like, that would be a deal breaker if that's truly the way that she sees him.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm not sure I'm completely following, but I think I do. Well, I definitely agree that, you know, as life also becomes more clear to people, I think part of the reason it's hard for people who stay with their first loves is that, you know, like, human beings are sort of biologically programmed to, like, fall in love very young, like,
right.
what our society is, like, very young, where you just don't know the options
right.
that are open to you in your life. And so I think that that's the statistics of that sort of lining up with what you want from your biological existence is pretty slim. But it's sort of like, yeah, people kind of have to get to know themselves and know, like, what
right.
they can do with their life, and also compatibility with another person in terms of that. And I think that that's something. But I think again, I think sometimes Eric gets unfairly tarred with this. Like he said he's never been in love with someone. He's a youngish guy, but old enough to kind of like know if this is something that he would want for some long haul, right? I think. Like
that's a really good point. Yeah, it's kind of like when I think of this, I think of my grandma. Like I have this type of grandma who, like, literally something I liked when I was like 10. Like I said, oh, I like that. That's what she thinks I like throughout my whole life.
I love that.
Oh, I made I made you a lemon meringue because I know you love lemon meringue. It's like, no, actually I don't. It's just I must have saw it on a TV commercial around you when I was 10 or something, right?
That's sweet. Greg, is your grandmother still around?
She's my one grandparent who's still alive. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah. So anyway, grandparents get a filtered view of their grandchildren anyway, just like parents have
definitely
filtered view of their kids. But you're right. I think Eric is constantly trying to like indicate that it's not a big deal. And, you know, maybe he was focusing on his career or, like, you know, trying to, like, get money in the bank account or, you know, dealing with his dad being in prison or, you know, like, a zillion other things that, like, he needed to get out of the way before he could settle down.
Right.
That's completely natural. And if Rachel wasn't like every other bachelor and bachelorette in history, which is, like, you know, you're vulnerable. Let's talk about relationships. Like, what do you look for in somebody? You know, all these fucking things that they all talk about, and that's all they talk about. If she actually would ask him a question about himself, maybe he would explain all of that to you and why he hasn't had a long-term committed relationship. It's like, that's when this show really makes me think, makes my brain aware that this is all just like one big fucking bubble that they live in. Or pressure cooker, as you put it.
I wonder how long Rachel has seen the show before she came on Nick's season.
Oh, well, this is something that a guy I work with and I talk about all the time, which is we are now in the era where everyone who's on the show grew up with the show.
Which super interesting to me.
That was never more apparent than Chris Soules' season, because it was like, he's the Iowa farm boy. All the girls are like giggly because no one really knows what Iowa is, but they know that farming is cute. And like every girl on that show knew, like came on the show having grown up with the show and knew exactly what to say to the camera and knew exactly what a rose ceremony was and had all of their outfits picked out. I mean, it was just like mind numbing, like seeing the template. It was like the fourth wall of the template of the show had been broken.
Yes.
Rachel comes from that era.
There's also cultural thing that goes along with that, where I think reality TV, you know, it came into being. There's like skepticism and backlash to it, but eventually it really gets into the mainstream. And I think like we'll take for granted, like I think we are taking for granted, like reality TV is a genre that exists, and it's not even like we need to have commentaries on like this is weird, this new form. It's like a form that exists. People watch it. People self-consciously go on to these shows, and like something comes out of all of that. That is so interesting, you know. But I don't know what Rachel's history with the show is.
Well, I assume it's, you know, of that. I mean, she's a recent addition. I mean, it was Nick's was just the last one, right?
Right. Yeah, she was on the show and then was the Bachelorette. I think that was something that was like really quick, but
I mean, I think she like makes it a little less evident because she's like seems to be brighter than the average person.
Yeah, she's smart. Yeah,
she's more stoic, which is nice. But you know, because like you have Raven last season, he's like, I'm a virgin, I'm gonna lose my virginity. It's like you know, I don't think Rachel would ever, you know, she's got a little bit more going on.
Although I wish that I hope that they didn't have Eric skip down the street the morning after. I hope that they have someone do to maybe Brian or but they won't. I still can't believe that. That's what I think of Raven, unfortunately. I think of two things: her skipping down the street after having sex apparently, and then her looking like terrible this season.
Oh yeah, the jaundice. Yeah, that's all I can think about anymore when I think of Raven. Yeah. It's like her face turned yellow. I mean, well, let's be honest though. As much as like I think intellectually we favor Rachel over someone like Raven, I mean, it's still like Rachel has literally not talked about anything other than are you guarded? You know, are you vulnerable? What do you look for in a relationship? She like literally has not talked about her job once or like what her interests are. I mean, it's just the same old shit. It's like,
but that's why I think she knows the show really well. Her friends say that they know the show really well.
Right. They're probably the ones who like recommended her or whatever, signed her up or something.
That's why I feel like she knows how to play this. You know, it's like these are, you know, she's not going to rock the boat in terms of the template, you know, because she's a Black Bachelorette. That's also that's already like the thing that. Like, she's playing, like, a very traditional Bachelorette, except that she's Black, which obviously is just her kind of, like, identity politics. And so I don't know how self-conscious that is, though, but she seems smart enough that I tend to think, like, she's got to be self-consciously, like, sort of deciding what to push and what to to keep kind of traditional. But, yeah, you're right that she asks a lot of the same questions. But I mean, this is also a huge machine, right? Where it's like, sure that, you know, she's being coached on what to do. And it's like, this is what works, this is what doesn't work. And you get to decide only so much.
Yeah, well put. I mean, in the terms of in the pantheon of machines, there's the Chicago Democratic Party. And then there's the Bachelor, Bachelorette, Bachelor in Paradise.
Nice.
Oh, and then there's and then there's like Alabama football, right?
Yeah.
And Vanderbilt baseball. Don't they produce a lot of major leaguers? I don't know. So those are your machines. It's like, you're right. It's like once you get in the template, you're never going to be anything other than the template.
Yeah. Which, I mean, it's like I don't fault an individual necessarily for that. It's nice when you see like moments of individuality, but I'm sure like any person put into it.
Well, and isn't that what an actor or actress does anyway? Like they go on and they read lines on a script and we don't hold them accountable.
Like I totally agree. Yes. Exactly. I see this very much in that same kind of paradigm where it's like you are answering to all of these people and you're sort of doing what they want you to do. And so I think, you know, like the individual things you bring to it are sort of like the same things that an actor or an actress would bring to a role. So, yeah.
That could have been the smartest thing ever said on Bachelor Masters to date. Congratulations. Mark this down.
Why don't you tweet at us if you agree or disagree? Tell us something smarter. Oh, look, we're having wake up. He does have his shirt off. And
I love this part right here. I love where she like she escorts him out of the bathroom. They're like, I don't know, brushing their teeth together or something. And then she closes the bathroom door.
She closes the door as he's like walking out.
Which I find hilarious because, I mean, whatever. It's like, okay, if you're going to go take a number two, fine. Like, close the door. But I don't know. I love staying in places. Like, I like staying in boutique hotels. Like, the Standard. There's a place called the Standard in downtown L.A., which the bathroom, the shower is in the middle of the room, and it's glassed wall. So there's no way you can't watch the other person's shower. I love it. Now, it's true that the toilet does have a partition, so you can at least, like, number two in peace. But how cool is that? You know, it's like you gotta, it's like you're showering, it's super sexy. So like if she was just taking a shower, I would be really disappointed that she thought to close the door. But
well, I love that
we don't
say. I agree. I just
but isn't the cameraman in there, or did they just leave the camera on the table?
It's like something that's supposed to suggest like intimacy at first, like he has his shirt off and stuff, and then it's followed immediately by something that's like, the most like you're gonna close yourself off right away, which I thought is why it's so funny, like right next to each other.
So now we come to the end of the episode, which is Peter.
Yes, the big drama.
And you can tell he's already in douche mode. Like, his whole body language is stiff and not condescending, but just...
Yeah, he's not into it.
He hasn't. He's looking for a way out, and I mean, even the way he's dressed, you know, he's doing like the t-shirt with the, you know, the unbuttoned, the kind of gap button down on top of it. He just looks schleppy. I mean, granted, this is the guy who wore the gray pocket tee last
Oh,
episode in
yeah,
his
I know you
hometown,
won't
but
forgive him for
I
that.
mean, he just looks schleppy. The best he ever looked was when he was Bear Grylls in it up on the mountain, like when he was wearing the ski parka and his hair was blown in the wind. I mean, he looked rugged and manly, but here he just looks like a college student, you know?
Yeah. He always looks a little bit like, I don't know if you seem a little more maybe high class than this, Craig, but if you get a Supercuts cut. And you
Right.
see what the Supercuts models on the photos look
Right.
like. It's like Gap or Supercuts kind of model. It's like that kind of thing.
Well, you know, I don't shop in many like chains or franchises, but I just want to plug this. There's a Supercuts downtown LA on Flower and 9th, right near the Ralph's, right around the corner, which is a Supercuts in name only. It is a straight up salon, and it's because FITM is right around the corner, the Fashion Institute. So it's just like super high end, but at Supercut prices.
That
So
is a great
I go there
plug
to get my haircut,
because I think
and
I will go there too.
I've like literally never had a bad haircut there. I mean, I get great haircuts these days. So
That's
anyway, if you're in the
amazing.
area, go there. So I just wanted to point that out because I think there are, like, if you go from Supercuts to Supercuts, some places try harder than others.
Well, that makes sense being next to FITM, as we've said. We've all kind of inhabited near that area. That's a very fashionable area.
Well,
Nice.
when I lived downtown, I lived in a building that was like also a FITM building. Like it wasn't FITM, but like if they didn't have room in their buildings for like the students, they would overflow into my building.
Oh.
So every time when I would take the elevators up to my place, there would always be like 18-year-olds in like these, you know, like cutting edge like Project Runway outfits.
Well, that's awesome. I lived above the Ralph's there, and that was the same
That's
thing.
right, you
There was
did. You
tons of
did. So you know
FITM.
exactly what Supercuts I'm talking about. I forgot about
Well,
that.
I never got a cut there, so I've never been inside, but I guess I know the area. But yeah, there were lots of FITM. Yeah, I was right across the street, so it was
Yeah, there was
obvious.
like that juice, there was like a Jamba Juice on the corner
Yes,
there
exactly.
or whatever. Wow, we cross paths many times in our
I
life.
know. Next time we, if we both move, I think we'll accidentally move to the same area again. Oh
Well, you can come over to East LA. We can do our podcast
man,
from
I would love that. The best part
overlooking
of L, as much as I do love the Valley, I think it's underrated. East LA is where it's at. So
it
well
is.
done.
It is. Okay. Well, so you know, all of this is a way of avoiding talking about Peter because, like, there's not much left to say that we haven't already said. I mean.
He's doing his shtick right now where he's about to go and do a spiel about, an engagement means marriage to him and whatever.
Well, as another way of trying to avoid talking about him, so let's talk a little bit about scheduling here. So we're gonna like literally go right from the men tell all to the finale, and then I think we get a week off, and then it's Bachelor in Paradise.
Yeah, I believe so. Or is it, it might be. Yeah, is it 2 weeks or 1 week?
Well, either way, I mean, I think you know, I'm super excited for it. I've made no secret that like really my real love is in Bachelor in Paradise, and you know, I'm really happy that we started with the Bachelorette because it gives us a chance to warm up and, you know, grow our listener base and kind of get the kinks worked out when we've had a few kinks. But the pace of Bachelor in Paradise goes a lot faster. So like there's a lot more that goes on just by the nature of having like a lot more couples and a lot more drama and a lot more movement. So I think I'm going to get super excited about it, and we'll have some really good podcasting going on. But you know, the opposite of that is Peter. So there's Bachelor in Paradise on one end of the spectrum, and then there's Peter on the other, who's like just getting duller the more. I mean, I'm just staring at him right now, and I'm just getting more and more bored with him as the episode goes on. And who are these people that show up? What's going on here? Some kid just shows up out of thin air, and
It's this Rachel's little like Spanish girl that's supposed to be so cute. Even she's bored with him because they're talking about something serious, and then this girl comes up and she's like, oh my god, they're not in frame when Rachel acknowledges that. Right. She's like, well, why don't you come over here? And then the little girl is terrified.
Well, poor Peter. So, like, if you go back to the beginning of the season, so she drags him to a puppy show in Palm Springs.
Yeah. Oh, that's
and
right.
And then it's up an Arctic mountain in the Siberia, and then it's baby clothes shopping for his sister's baby, which he hates, and then it's like entertaining some random toddler that comes up in the middle of this desolate road in the middle of a winery. So, like, you know, Peter hasn't exactly gotten a totally fair shake here either.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, who wants to go baby shopping with a girl you've just started getting to know? I mean, sorry, women out there, but that's not, you know, a man might say, oh yeah, I'm having a good time, but Baby Gap is not a place that most men want to spend.
It's another thing, I think the show makes him seem like, one of his good qualities is he's great with kids, because he plays with his Midwestern niece and nephew.
Right. Well, if he's from Wisconsin, he has to be, like, wholesome, right?
Yeah, and,
like,
exactly. Good with
kids and dogs.
He's supposed to be
like
wholesome, that's true.
He can also milk a cow and, you know.
I wish they had done, you know. Oh, man, I wish that Dean had to do something on that farm, you know, that he hadn't been to in years, and that he has to go and, like, clean up a disgusting mess or something.
Yeah.
But, Craig, real quick update. Actually, I was completely wrong with the schedule for the show. We've got a few more weeks.
Did you just look it up?
I'm looking it up. So this week was the 24th, and we had, they call this week 9 overnight dates, which is half true because we only had one overnight date.
Right.
But the Men Tell All is next week on 7/31. And then we actually do have one more week we have the Final Rose week 10 on August 7th. And
okay. The
same week they're doing After the Final Rose. So we have 2 weeks left.
Oh, okay. And then it goes right into Bachelor in Paradise that following week? Because I think it's like the 14th.
Well, then, yeah, that's right. August 7th is when this one, and then it goes right into Bachelor in Paradise.
Wow.
So, you know what? Oh. Bachelor Masters is going to be airing all the time.
Our mastery is just going to keep elevating to the point where we're going to have to call ourselves the Bachelor
Doctors.
PhDs. dissertations or something. The ABDs. That's a joke that only PhD students will get.
Well, I laughed like I get it, but I didn't get it.
Alrighty, well, I don't know. Well, so this is where they look at each other and realize it's over, and Rachel gets all uncomfortable and keeps saying yes and batting her fake eyelashes, and he gets all douchey and makes up a moral superiority religious excuse for why he doesn't want to see her anymore. And that is it. We get to be continued in what I don't, in a font that seemed not standard.
Maybe the editor got lazy and couldn't find the usual font. Yeah,
default
whatever.
Font wasn't there. What's that default font in Final Cut Pro that you immediately know something was done in Final Cut Pro? Is like,
you know, I wonder what it is. You know, now so many things for the demographic that would use Final Cut Pro is moving to Premiere, and I think like they have their default, you know, Adobe font.
Yeah.
Like Arial or something.
You're so right. Yeah. It's like, because Apple just decided to kill Final Cut Pro on its own, and then Premiere came out with this, like, you know, version that could edit 360 video and do all this crazy stuff, so now everyone's going there, and you're right. It's like, it's more like a Windows font than a Mac font.
Yes.
I feel like maybe this is, like, The Bachelor, they just decided they were going to go off in that direction, because maybe it's like the new generation of editors is coming online, so we get a whole new font set.
Yeah, I love it. Well, yeah, things are winding down here, and Peter is spinning his crap. He's done.
We don't see Chris Harrison.
Yeah,
again.
You're right. What is
he didn't make the trip to Dallas.
Is he filming Bachelor in Paradise? Do they film this concurrently? Is that why he disappears here?
Well, no, because, like, the whole scandal went down just last month, so I mean, The Bachelorette would have been long finished by then, so
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. I mean, he does do that. I've mentioned this before. He does do that daytime Who Wants to Be a Millionaire thing,
I
so I
thought
don't
you were
know.
kidding about that. I didn't know he was
No.
really doing
No,
that.
he totally does. It's funny. It's right after, well, it's during that whole daytime block of, like, random, like, low-budget game shows. Like, Craig Ferguson does his whole thing,
Right. Yeah.
which I find exceedingly odd that he would give up his late-night show to do some daytime show. But,
Someone
and then
blackmailed him.
and you got Steve Harvey and all that whole mess. So,
All right,
all right,
Chris.
Chris, I think I'm done.
I think this has been a great conversation. We got 2 more weeks of this historic season, a great season of The Bachelorette, and I can't wait personally, Craig.
Well, I am almost certain that next week I will be back in East LA, so our slight echo will be gone. We will be doing it over the internet in separate rooms. But I look forward to discussing all the drama of the men tell all with you next week.